Reagan versus Tegan versus City of McDonough. What a crowd. Oh, we have all the public defenders in here. Okay.
May it please the court.
We have to be at ease in the courtroom first, ma'am.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, Ms. Remar.
May it please the court. Rachel Bishop, along with my co-counsel, Rob Remar, for the appellant, Ms. Ziana Tegan. Before jailing Ms. Tegan for 12 days for failing to pay a fine, the City of McDonough's Municipal Court and its Chief Judge Patton made no finding, as required by the Supreme Court in Bearden v. Georgia, that Ms. Tegan's failure to pay that fine had been willful. The issue before this court is whether the city can be held liable for this and other violations of Ms. Tegan's constitutional rights. Georgia law empowers municipalities such as McDonough to establish municipal courts, to appoint their judges, to operate and fund these municipal courts, and at the time of this case, to remove those municipal court judges for any reason.
Does it matter, in your view, that the underlying offense in question was a misdemeanor charge and not a charge that Ms. Tegan violated a municipal ordinance?
No, Your Honor, because Ms. Tegan's harms don't stem from this individual adjudication of this state offense. They stem from the policies and practices of the municipal court, which applied equally to individuals charged with state traffic offenses and municipal offenses.
Well, in terms of the underlying violation, I think you're exactly right in my personal opinion that the function of the court doesn't affect the violation. But my question was directed more toward the first issue you've presented, and that is whether or not the municipal court and its judges are acting as arms of the state when they are enforcing misdemeanor statutes as opposed to municipal ordinances.
No, Your Honor, because the city still exercises the same amount of control over the municipal court, regardless of the type of offense it is adjudicating in a given proceeding.
But who gives a municipal court is a creature of the municipality, as you've said.
Yes.
The municipality can only give that court jurisdiction to handle the municipality's ordinances. Who gives the municipal court the judicial power to handle things like misdemeanors, which are state offenses?
The General Assembly, Your Honor.
Then doesn't that at least cut against your argument that the municipal court is to be treated like any other municipal entity and not like an arm of the state?
No, Your Honor, because while the General Assembly said that municipal courts could adjudicate municipal offenses, that's still contingent.
No, you mean misdemeanor offenses?
I do, Your Honor. That's still contingent on the municipality choosing to establish and operate this court.
Let me tell you why I think you might lose and give you a chance to tell me why I'm wrong. It seems to me that all of your claims really are claims challenging actions of the municipal court judges that are actions that are taken under authority of the state law and not the city. And my reasoning is that the uniform rules that the Georgia Supreme Court promulgates and are binding on the municipal courts provide for all of the hearings and rights and so forth that you complain about. For example, Rule 20.1 requires that they have that hearing within 72 hours that you complain about. So it seems to me all of the claims, obviously the ones in the very beginning advising about rights of the to have a lawyer and waiver thereof, but also the ones when you know, the arrest warrant and the hearing that was supposed to be held within 72 hours and was not held. All of that is taken pursuant to actions that are taken pursuant to the authority of the state under the uniform rules, plus Georgia statute 15-6-8-4. Capital B says that the superior courts supervise the municipal courts, and any judgment of the municipal court is appealable to the superior courts. Why doesn't that mean that you lose?
A few reasons, Your Honor. First, while decisions are appealable to the superior court, the superior court couldn't review the violations of Ms. Teagan's constitutional rights that stemmed from these policies because there was no decision for her to appeal. We complained that she didn't receive the Bearden hearing she was entitled to, so she couldn't appeal. There was no finding that it was willful.
She did have a hearing. It just wasn't within 72 hours, and it didn't do what Bearden said it should do. But it is the rule, 20.1, that provides for that hearing. The city doesn't make any. The city can't. The Supreme Court rules are binding on the municipality, and they cannot change them unless the Georgia Supreme Court approves. Isn't that right?
That is right, Your Honor. But Ms. Teagan could not have realistically appealed because she didn't have. The hearing you refer to was after she had been in prison for 10 days, and it wasn't a hearing as much as it was the judge just telling her why he had taken the actions that he had taken. Your point is well taken that the municipal court rules do provide for specific things, but I would also call your attention to Municipal Court Rule 1.2, authority to enact rules which deviate from the uniform rules. And this provides that municipal court judges, or in a circuit like this, the chief judge, could propose rules that deviate from these rules. And while those would be subject to Supreme Court approval, it also provides that they could create internal court procedures, and that while those were supposed to be filed with the Supreme Court, those are not subject to the Supreme Court's rules.
They would be if they contradicted the rules the Supreme Court approved.
And in
Supreme
fact,
Court sits as an advisory court, a supervisory court, basically, as I see it.
Yes,
and
Your Honor.
So does the Superior Court, in a way. We have a case that we decided a short time ago, a few months ago, that came out of Alabama, a criminal case. And they tried to hold the clerk of the magistrate court, the county clerk of the criminal court, responsible for the performance of magistrate judges just because the clerk appointed them. And that would make the clerk an appellate court. So what you want to do is make the city basically an appellate court, but there's no they exercise no appellate authority.
No, Your Honor, but the city does exercise authority over the judge it appointed in that it could remove him at any time for any reason. And Ms. Teagan's harms aren't stemming from individual judicial decisions this judge made. Every Friday, the clerk.
Well, that's not completely right, because your complaint argues that at the end of the day, despite all the other, and there are a lot of really bad things that happened here, in my opinion. But one of the last bad things that you complain about is that the judge sent her to prison for alleged non-payment of the fine without inquiring about why she didn't pay or willfulness or anything like that.
Yes,
that's an individual decision made by that judge, right? It has to be.
No, Your Honor, not the way that it was carried out in the McDonough Municipal Court. The warrant was prepared by a court employee. She prepared five of them that day.
But that the warrant just gets you arrested. And I'm not saying the warrant was correct. But what it does is get you arrested and thrown into jail. after that, after that, she waited the 10 days, more than she should have, to come before the judge. The judge then decides what to do about the nonpayment of a fine, and he decides to tell her, you're going to serve the remainder of your sentence unless the fine gets paid. That has to be an individual judicial decision, does it not?
Yes, Your Honor. That is an independent judicial decision.
Subject to a writ of habeas corpus out of the Superior Court.
Your Honor, this...
They say she could have gone to the Superior Court right away and got a writ of habeas corpus. That's an example of the Superior Court, in effect, supervising the municipal court.
If I may answer both of your questions. No, Your Honor.
Through remedies. Yeah, go ahead.
Your Honor, technically, habeas corpus relief would be available, but as this court recognized in Moore versus Federal Bureau of Prisons, it's unrealistic to expect that someone there in a 10-day confinement or here in a 12-day confinement could realistically file for habeas and have it granted.
In the state courts in this circuit, we have people who are held longer than is required before they have a preliminary hearing, before they have a bail hearing. That happens commonplace, what we describe here. And they seek relief in the court of general jurisdiction in the state in the form of writ of habeas corpus.
Your Honor, I don't think...
Not our court, the state court.
Yes, Your Honor, but...
Which puts the state court... they've created a situation where all these things can be remedied, all these miscues in the municipal court, which basically violate constitutional rights, can be remedied in the state superior court.
Your Honor, Ms. Keegan complains of the...
And go all the way to the Supreme Court of Georgia.
That wouldn't remedy the pre-deprivation harm that she was entitled to this process before she was imprisoned. And that goes to your question, Judge Jordan, that even if that 10-day hearing was an independent judicial decision, her harm happened as soon as she was arrested before even having that hearing. It was the denial of the pre-deprivation proceeding before her arrest.
My point was not about all of that. My point was about the last decision you complain about, which was to put her in jail for what you say is a non-existent offense, the non-payment of a fine.
Yes, Your Honor.
My only point is that has to be a judicial decision of some kind. You think it's illegitimate, but it's a judicial decision.
Yes, Your Honor, I will concede that. Thank you.
Mr. Benson.
May it please the court, Harvey Gray on behalf of the city of McDonough. I have immense respect for Mr. Remar and forgot your last name, I'm sorry. I know they feel passionately about this case, but the rule of law that they're advocating runs counter to everything we know about the way courts function, the way appellate.
Boy, if you want to talk, you may be right at the end of the day, but if you want to talk about the rule of law, there's a lot of bad stuff happening in the city of McDonough. Well, I mean, this is a litany of really bad things.
Well, I would suggest that
let me just tell you from my perspective, I speak only for myself, not for my two distinguished colleagues.
Right.
But if what the judge in this case had done was for a violation of a municipal ordinance and not for a state misdemeanor violation, I think you'd be in serious trouble legally, because I think there'd be grounds to say that the municipal court judge acting in that capacity is not a state actor, because he's doing only what the municipality authorizes him to do, notwithstanding any level of review afterwards.
He's probably going beyond his power under the municipality.
So the
municipality, in my view, isn't authorizing anything. The judge is sort of like a loose cannon, with authority to be a loose cannon, I suppose. Like any employee, you go off on a lark.
Your point is well taken, Judge. This case does not involve an ordinance. It involves a state misdemeanor offense for which this judge's legal authority derives directly from the state. It does not derive from the municipality, and the municipality has no opportunity to control this case. They may fire him in the future. There may be other cases that come in the future that address this issue. This is not a class action. This is one person's case.
As a practical matter, the allegations are not that it's one person's case. The allegations are, again, they may not legally succeed for reasons you've identified, but the allegations are that this is part and parcel of what happens with every single municipal court judge there every single week, day in, day out, year in, year out.
Well,
that's and those allegations were not disputed by the city of McDonough. Mm-hmm. So that's a bad state of affairs. You may win at the end of the day. But
well, this case, Your Honor, I just respectfully disagree with the context of this case. The constitutional claims that are asserted in this case, 6th Amendment, 4th and 14th Amendment, they fail as a matter of law on the merits. I'll go to the policymaker issue first, but I would suggest to you the 6th Amendment claim cannot succeed. It's absolutely barred by Heck versus Humphrey. She was convicted. It's barred by McKinney versus Pate. She had an absolute right within 30 days to get a de novo trial. If you file a petition for cert to the Superior Court, and that's the way I believe our system does work. Errors of law committed by a judge are reviewed by appellate courts. You don't get to jump into federal court and assert a damages remedy. Heck bars those types of claims.
When somebody told her she had the right to an appeal and to have counsel appointed if she was indigent?
Absolutely. She was told that.
When?
She was told that she had a right to appeal at the hearing
Which hearing?
March 28th.
I don't remember the date.
The very first hearing.
That's the first
when
hearing.
She first
the first
appeared.
Hearing, she appeared for arraignment. Judge McFarland presided over that. He told everyone there that they had a right to counsel. She asked for a continuance to get a lawyer. She appeared back in the court, and she was given a form. She's not illiterate. There's no allegation here she's illiterate, and she prepared a civil rights complaint herself. She admitted in her deposition that she did it by herself. She did an amended complaint. She filed a motion to strike affirmative defenses. She filed a motion for summary judgment. I've defended cases from lawyers that have drafted worse complaints. She's not illiterate. She signed this form. She checked every box on the form. There's about 7 of them that inform her of her right to counsel. She signed it knowingly and voluntarily. The judge watched her and submitted an affidavit, and he signed off on that and said, I determined that you made a knowing and intelligent waiver. That's a judicial decision.
Yeah, a judicial decision.
Who is totally foreclosed by virtue of Heck versus Humphrey. You can't attack a conviction that has not been overturned after the fact, and you can't make due process claims if, in fact, they're...
Well, she could have been in the Superior Court the first time they denied one of her rights.
No question.
Right away, with a writ of habeas corpus.
No,
Superior Court judge would have just shut it down.
None of these issues would have been foreclosed. You get de novo review.
Talking about after she was found guilty. I'm talking about during the process, things that they did to her.
Well,
she could have been in the Superior Court.
Let's go to the Bearden claim, the kind of the sine qua non of the argument here, is that Bearden prohibited jailing her without inquiring into her ability to pay. Your Honor, you may remember your dissent in the case of Brinson versus Provident Community Services, 783 Fed APPX 874, 11th Circuit, 2017. I say your dissent advisedly because what you did is you agreed with the majority that the jurisdictional issue was present. But you then said, let me go ahead and deal with the merits of the underlying claim, the Bearden claim, if you will. You said, two other judges here were not on that panel, so excuse me for reading a little bit, but the argument is my argument, and it couldn't be stated better. Having addressed the threshold jurisdictional issue, I would proceed to the merits. The sine qua non of Ms. Brinson's claim is her indigent status. This was a case, she was on probation, they revoked her probation because she didn't pay her fine, and they did not consider her indigent status. The sine qua non of her claim is her indigent status. Same issue here in this case. In Bearden versus Georgia Supreme Court held that revoking an indigent defendant's probation for failure to pay fines or restitution violates due process rights under the 14th Amendment. Exactly the same claim that's being pursued here. You said, I see no meaningful distinction between fines and restitution on the one hand and probation services on the other. I would add as a corollary to that, I see no meaningful distinction between those two elements and the payment of a $745 fine when she was found guilty of an offense for which she clearly was guilty. You said under this precedent, the court's imposition of the probation fees did not injure Ms. Brinson until the court revoked her probation and imprisoned her for failing to pay those fees. Exactly the same situation that's being argued here. But you said at that point she had a remedy. She did have a remedy. The fact that she was in jail 12 days makes no difference. She was sentenced to 60 days. She has a right to file a habeas corpus petition. She did not file that. And as you said, she could have appealed the revocation and her resulting imprisonment. She did not appeal, however. Consequently, the court's actions in sentencing her to imprisonment remain undisturbed. In other words, the law considers the court's actions lawful. You said the Supreme Court in Heck versus Humphrey instructs that plaintiffs may not pursue damages actions that would, in effect, amount to a declaration that their state court conviction and sentence, though undisturbed, are invalid. Here, Ms. Brinson's claims that her probation was improperly revoked due to her inability to pay, just like the argument here, fees, in essence, is an attack on the legality of the custody to which she was subject when she filed her complaint. Thus, I would affirm on the merits. Same exact situation here, and I couldn't really say it better. The argument that is made here by the appellant is that the judge in this case, Judge Patton, was acting under authority, judicial authority somehow issued him to him by the city of McDonough. That's incorrect. They rely upon the Georgia Constitution, Article 6, Section 1, Paragraph 1, and they note that the judicial power of the state shall be vested exclusively in the following classes of cases: magistrate courts, probate courts, juvenile courts, state courts, superior courts, courts of appeal, and the Supreme Court. And they say that the General Assembly may establish or authorize municipal courts. Well, did they do that? They did that. In 36-2-1, the General Assembly approved the establishment of municipal courts. The appellant says, well, because those delineated courts don't include the municipal court, then it must derive its power, and its judges must derive its power from the municipality as opposed to the state. But that ignores Georgia Statute 36-32-3. It's entitled Powers of Municipal Court Judges in Criminal Cases, which is what we have here. All judges of all municipal courts in this state shall have and are given the same powers and authorities as magistrates in the matter of and pertaining to criminal cases of whatever nature in the several courts. Couldn't be clearer that the judge in this case presiding over a criminal case acts pursuant to the authority of the state, not pursuant to the authority of a municipality. And how could the municipality ever protect itself from damages? They suggest, well, you could fire this judge. They may come to that. But in this case, in this particular case, they do not have the power and would never have the power to overrule a judge making judicial decisions in a state court criminal case.
You mean the municipality doesn't care what its judges do?
It has nothing to do with whether they care about it. They don't have the authority to overrule a judge.
But the allegation, again, I think you're going to win on the merits of this case. But your attempt, in my opinion, to defend what happened here is going off on the wrong foot, because the allegation is not that this just happened to Ms. Teagan in this case, but that it's happening every single day, every single week in the McDonough Municipal Court. And you're telling me that the policymakers, whoever they may be, in the city of McDonough, have no power to remedy that circumstance by, for example, going to the chief judge of the court and saying, listen, we've heard these disturbing claims and allegations. We don't know if they're true, but can you make sure that this stuff is not happening? You're telling me they're powerless to do that.
They're powerless to overrule a municipal court judge in making legal decisions in a criminal trial.
That is not my question to you.
They can't do that.
My question is before the fact. You're saying after the fact. I agree with you about after the fact.
I have this case. This case is Ms. Teagan's case in a criminal trial where she did not avail herself of all the remedies that are available to her. She did not file a habeas corpus petition. The judgment is final. She cannot attack that conviction. And Bearden versus State, Judge Joe Flatt's dissent is absolutely on point, and I stand behind it. I'm not defending other cases. There may come other cases. This case, these facts do not warrant the relief that is being requested.
I think what Judge Jordan is telling you, as the lawyer for the city, at least sometimes, I don't know whether you, regularly.
I am lawyer, not.
but somebody ought to tell the city to straighten out their procedure.
I certainly can relay, and I will relay, Judge Jordan's comments. I'm hired by an insurance carrier.
You ought to relay the whole court's comments. I mean, they're running a cattle call kangaroo court down there, and somebody needs to. But this is not uncommon.
Well, if this court were to rule that a municipal court judge is a policymaker for Section 1983 damages liability, my advice to every city would be to disband the municipal court.
Make them all state courts.
Make them state courts. You can't, the municipality does not have control over individual cases like this. And this is the only case that's before this court, is the Teagan case. And it's got bad facts for the appellant.
I think we have your case.
Thank you.
May it please the court. In 1983, the United States Supreme Court ruled that it was unconstitutional to revoke a suspended sentence without a prior determination that the defendant had willfully failed to pay the fine. That's been the law since 1983. It is the well-established...
Counsel, we understand all that.
And we
understand that reprehensible things took place in this case.
They took place.
I mean, you don't have to tell us what the law is. We understand what the constitutional law is.
Well, my point, Your Honor, is that deprivation took place pursuant to a well-established policy of the City of McDonough Municipal Court to issue arrest warrants for failure to pay a fine without any prior determination of willfulness.
I accept your underlying arguments about the unconstitutionality of some things that may have occurred here. So you have, for me, you have a sympathetic ear. But part of the problem you have is that a lot of your claims, maybe not all of them, but a lot of your claims question the validity of Ms. Teagan's conviction. And why isn't the city right? The arguments that Mr. Gray made suggesting that Heck bars those claims right now. I mean, one of your arguments is that her conviction is invalid because of everything that predated it and everything that postdated it. A claim like that calls into question the validity of the conviction. And Heck says you generally can't sue for damages unless that conviction is vacated, expunged, or set aside. How do you get around that?
Your Honor, if we focus on the central issue in this case, which is her imprisonment for 12 days without a prior determination, that does not call into question the underlying conviction of driving without insurance. She was jailed for a city-created, non-existent offense of failure to pay fine. Having a damages remedy for her being imprisoned without a prior hearing for a city offense does not call into question, Your Honor.
You're turning the city into an appellate court, basically. Speak for myself. That's what you're saying. That we had a case in Alabama where a clerk of the circuit court happened to appoint magistrates, had the authority under state law. Magistrates didn't hold preliminary hearings, had somebody detained without probable cause, things of that sort, who had been arrested, and they wanted to hold the clerk responsible for what the magistrates were doing, when the law of Alabama provided for all sorts of remedies, most importantly, the writ of habeas corpus. But nobody did anything about it. They didn't want to hold the clerk, who's not a lawyer, just happened to appoint the magistrates. So that would have turned the clerk into an appellate court to review everything these magistrates and judges did. And if they made an error, they'd be subject the clerk to damages. And the clerk wouldn't have judicial immunity because the clerk's not a judge. The city here wouldn't have judicial immunity as the appellate court because it's not a judge.
Your Honor, the deprivation here occurred the minute she was put in handcuffs.
We understand what the deprivation
was. But there was no remedy for that, Your Honor.
And what I'm trying to tell you is she had a remedy immediately.
Your Honor, she did.
In the Superior Court of Georgia.
In Judge Anderson's concurrence in the case of Morrow versus Federal Bureau of Prisons, Judge Anderson pointed out that Heck does not apply where someone is already out of jail and had no reasonable ability to challenge the incarceration. She did not, as an indigent pro se individual who's brought in handcuffs to the jail, have the ability to file a writ of habeas corpus, which requires that you bring it to the Superior Court judge, that the Superior Court judge sanction that writ, that it then be served on the defendant. By the time that happened, she would have been deprived of her constitutional rights for an even longer period of time. The point is that there was not a pre-deprivation hearing, and there's no remedy in Georgia law for the lack of that pre-deprivation hearing. The case that
there
Mr.
is
Grace,
a remedy under Georgia law in the Superior Court because that violates the United States Constitution. It's called a writ of habeas corpus. You're putting me away without complying with the federal constitution. And by the way, Georgia's constitution and Georgia's statutory law, which is all by and large the same because the Georgia statutory law picks up the constitutional rules.
Your Honor,
your argument is that's the law throughout this circuit. That's the law, as far as I know, in the United States and most municipalities and counties. So your argument boils down to that she's indigent and didn't know how to do these things. And since she's indigent and didn't know how to do these things, whoever created this judicial process is to blame.
If I could just respond, Your Honor, even if there was habeas corpus available, that would not have remedied the fact that she was already incarcerated without a prior hearing.
The minute they put her in the jail, she could say to the jailer, I'm going to file a writ of habeas corpus, and she would have filed it the next day or the same day. And they would have had a hearing right away.
Even assuming that the court could have heard her writ of habeas corpus, she still would have been deprived of her liberty. That writ would not have cured the deprivation of her liberty.
Well, she would. The judge that deprived her of the hearing would be entitled to judicial immunity. And you knew that. That's the problem. That's why you want to sue the city.
Well, actually,
but that's just the way these systems operate.
The city had the absolute authority to remove this judge for any reason whatsoever.
There you are. You've got an incompetent judge, so every error that he makes, you turn into money damages.
No, Your Honor. This was done pursuant to a well-established city policy. Our exhibit attached to our summary judgment motion shows 64 individuals arrested for failure to pay a fine, both ordinance and state offenses, which were at over a period of 4 years. All the same, the city has generated like $7 million in revenue from fees and fines. The clerk of the court, acting on her own as a city employee, looks at a schedule of who has failed to pay their fine. She then automatically generates an arrest warrant. She presents
Counsel,
that to the judge.
We understand all of that.
I'm saying the city acquiesced.
I understand that. We understand all of that. I think we have your case.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Court will be in recess until 9 in the morning.
All rise.